It's just approaching 3:30, and we welcome to the studio Mr. Mark Searby.
Hello.
Hello.
We've got a nice bit of movie intro for you.
I think I've heard this many times.
Let's just let it play.
So we have the weekend approaching. It's yes. Movie night, or possibly DVD weekend. What are your tips?
Right, okay, so two films at the cinema. Let's start with those. Let's start with The Disaster Artist. This is a film, it's an adaptation of a book called The Disaster Artist by a guy called, an actor called Greg Sestero. It's about his early life in LA, trying to become an actor, his friendship with a gentleman and fellow actor called Tommy Wiseau, and also their exploits in trying to put together The Room, dubbed one of the worst films of all time. Let me start by saying this. I'm a massive fan of The Room. I have seen The Room about 15 or 16 times. I've met Tommy, I've met Greg. These are real people. The Room is not the worst film ever made. It is one of the worst films ever made. I give you that, you know, but it's got this cult status about it now. So what we have now with this film is a real film that is an adaptation. So it's got the Franco brothers in there. So it's got James Franco playing Tommy Wiseau and Dave Franco playing Greg Sestero. What I will say about Tommy Wiseau is he is an enigma. He is not a normal person. He is, if you've never seen the guy, you would think he's a Mighty Boosh character. He is so bizarre. He's so secretive as well. And this is the thing about what makes this film so interesting as well, because you want to know who Tommy Wiseau is. Why has he put all this money into making one of the worst films ever? And why is it still playing the circuit in London, in LA, in New York, all of it 10 years later? And still making loads and loads of money. So this is what the film sort of delves into. Early on, we get Greg Sestero. He's trying to move to LA and trying to become an actor. He's not a great actor, to be fair. Then he meets Tommy Wiseau, and basically they decide, you know what? We're great friends, and damn everybody else, we're going to go out, spend some money and make a film. But the problem is neither of them have ever made a film. So what happens is Tommy Wiseau decides, right, okay, I'm going to go out and get some camera equipment. I've written this film and I'm going to go out and get some camera equipment. So they turn up at this shop and they say, right, we want the camera equipment. They say, what do you want, analog or digital? And they went, we want both. Okay, you want both, right. So you want to hire it? No, we want to buy it. And they said, you don't buy these things, you just rent them. No, we're from Hollywood, we're doing this. So you have all of these weird things going on. Like, this guy has never, ever been in Hollywood, and now all of a sudden he's thrown himself into it. And what's great about this is James Franco plays Tommy Wiseau. You forget that this is James Franco. It honestly looks and sounds and feels like Tommy Wiseau. It is real method acting. He even directed the film, James Franco did, as Tommy Wiseau. So you get all of these bizarre things going on. Then what happens is they make the film and it goes out and it shows you the premiere and everybody's laughing at it. It's meant to be a serious drama. Everybody's laughing at it. And he runs out and you think, this is a little bit upsetting. But what they do very cleverly is they turn it round and they say, yes, I've made this great comedy. And everybody goes, yes, of course it's a comedy. And this is where it's become this like cult classic, basically. And it really, really got to me, this film, because it's a film about, it's basically a rags-to-riches tale. It's a story about having heart. It's about following your dreams. It's about never giving up. It's a film that shows how Hollywood should continue to make films. Don't worry about it. Just keep plugging away. I honestly think this is one of the greatest films about the inside of Hollywood ever made. And I do think it's one of the best films of the year. It's so funny. It's so hilarious. It's so heartfelt. You can't help but love Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero at any point.
I'm going to have to put that on my watch list then and keep an eye on that, because the way you describe it,
it's bonkers. No, yeah. Absolutely. It is completely bonkers. Like, when you go and see The Room with an audience, people throw spoons, people shout at the screen, and people jump up the screen, they throw... Yeah, you see, exactly. It's completely bonkers. And The Disaster Artist shows all of that in such a great way.
Okay, so an ironic title as well.
Yes.
The Man Who Invented Christmas.
Christmas Time.
As you may see, if you browse from left to right, you will see that we have tinsel in the studio.
Yes,
and it's also in the toilet around the mirror.
Oh, perfect. That's where it needs to be.
So, welcome to Charlie's Grotto.
So we've got Christmas film. This is... It's a loose story. It's a fast and loose story, shall we say, about Charles Dickens and how he came to write his classic A Christmas Carol. It's much more lighthearted than you would kind of expect something like this to be. It's not gothic, it's not Victorian, you know, it's not dark or anything else like that. It's so we have Dan Stevens, who most will know from Beauty and the Beast or Downton Abbey. He's playing Charles Dickens, a dry, sarcastic, witty Charles Dickens, not the type of Charles Dickens we kind of know from the classic films. And that actually works here. I think it works quite nicely. It's very... it's made for modern audiences. You know, this is not one of those prim and proper films at all. And I think that works. It lightens the mood quite a lot. We get a lot of fun in here. We get a lot of Charles Dickens being a little bit of a fool and a little bit of a rogue and all of these. And you see him struggle to write this book. So what happens is in the film, he takes inspiration from all of these different things, and then he's visited by a ghost, as to be expected. Mm-hmm. He's visited by Scrooge, a ghost played by Christopher Plummer. Now, this ghost is not the standard ghost either. He's very dry. He's very sarcastic. In fact, he is incredibly witty.
I was going to say, you mentioned Christopher Plummer. The stock's just gone up a couple of notches.
Well, it's worth it because he's great in this. He's absolutely fantastic. He's very funny in this. And the thing is, he sits there in the corner, and as Dickens is trying to get past this writer's block, he's writing things down, and Scrooge is going, no, this is completely wrong. No, you don't know what you're doing. Come on, man. So we have all of these little fun jokes. But underneath all of that, we have a very real story about Charles Dickens and how he was in debt and how his last three books had flopped and he was really struggling and the family was going out and buying all of these decadent things. His father had come back from Devon, an alcoholic, so he was having to deal with all of these. And I was really impressed with how they got the film to go from being very lighthearted, very jokey, and yes, we like Dan Stevens, to being very serious, especially about the alcoholism. I was really impressed with how they did that. I thought, this is very impressive. And then it flips back and we get a lot of jokey things going on. And the problem with the film is, and this might just be me, some people might like this, but there are a lot of obvious moments where you can see that they go, here's an example.
Okay.
There's one moment where Charles Dickens is running down the street and he bumps into somebody. And he goes, oh, so sorry about this, so sorry. What's your name? And he goes, it's David Copperfield. And you think, come on. You know, and you get all of these little bits in there that where it's like, okay, so he's got the inspiration from somebody's name or, you know, being in the pub with somebody or, you know, he's heard this story. To me, it kind of, I felt it was a little bit too cliched. It could have done without all of that. But, you know, take nothing away from it. This is actually quite a fun film. It's a very adult film. I will say that. This is not for kids because there's still a lot of dark storylines going on here. Dan Stevens is great. Dan Stevens is great in everything, I think. As I said, you know, it is... He's from Downton Abbey. This is very Downton Abbey-esque. If you like Downton Abbey, I love Downton Abbey. You're going to like this film.
So I can summarise that by saying it's a little bit Mr. Darcy.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good. That's right. That's.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, this is the type of film that you'll go, you'll enjoy it, you'll come away, and you know, by the end of the day, you may have forgotten about it, but you'll still had a good time when you've seen it.
Okay. I didn't know about the drinking, Charles Dickens.
See, this is
they
the
say
thing.
That the most creative people are often the most troubled and have demons, and drink is obviously one of the biggest.
Yeah, absolutely. And bizarrely, I found out this week that, you know, this new term that people, these young kids have got, which is throwing shade at people.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, Charles Dickens actually wrote that in his books.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Joining me in the studio, Mark Searby. We've done films and we're going to do some DVDs,
aren't
we?
Yes, yeah, we've got two DVDs/Blu-rays to talk about today. So let's start with the first one. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. That is the longest title I think we've ever had, possibly. It's about special operatives Valerian and Loreline who must race to save Alpha, a vast space metropolis from a marauding menace. It's a film based on a French comic book by Pierre Christin, Jean-Claude Mirizzi, and it's adapted for the screen by French director Luc Besson, who also did The Fifth Element. Yes! See, now we're going. Mm-hmm. So, The Fifth Element was a big space opera. It was very bright. It was very colourful. That's what we've got here with Valerian, basically. It's much the same, to be honest with you. However, there's a big difference here. Whereas The Fifth Element kept your attention because there was lots of people in it and it was kind of a little bit madcap, a little bit zany. This is this has very few famous people in it and is very messy. Very, okay. Very messy or confusing. I guess you could call it confusing as well. There's so much going off in this film.
So does it not know where it is?
Well, this is the weird thing. Because it's adapted from some, a graphic novel, you kind of think, you've got the story. How can it be this messy? But the opening third sort of starts with the film and, you know, it sets everything out. And you go, okay, all right, I'm kind of following this. But because it's so bright, so beautiful, and so it's throwing things at the screen, and it's doing this and it's doing that. And you go, okay, I'm trying to follow the story, but I'm being bombarded with all these flashing lights and all of these little creatures. And you think, I missed that bit. I don't know what's going on now. So there's a lot of stuff going on that takes your mind away from what you should be focusing on. And also, it's very fast. It's very frenetic. It's all very quick paced as well. So you can't take it in, really. That all quiets down by about the middle third. And by that point, you've kind of thought, I don't know what's going on. Hopefully, the story can, you know, help me understand it a bit more. It doesn't, because then all of a sudden, it starts to muddle through these bits and it starts to meander through a bit more of a storyline. They go to another planet and they have to get this away from these. And there's the MacGuffin of the piece is like this little, I don't know, tortoise-like thing that when you rub its back, diamonds come out, and and this is what they're trying to fight as well, and it's all just so confusing. It reminded me a lot of Dune. You remember the...
Oh, with Sting.
With Sting, yeah, and Colin McLaughlin. It reminded me of that, where you think, this looks great, but what is actually happening here? What do we know is actually happening? We don't know anything. Then you get the final third, which is, once again, all guns blazing, loads of things coming out at you, throwing at the screen. Yeah, oh, there's loads of fighting, there's loads of guns, and there's loads of space things, and we're doing more space things, and we're doing all of this, and you think, I still don't know what's going on. All I know is I'm being thrown all of these things at me, and I'm thinking, I don't know. You know, there's just a lot of running, jumping, and gunning throughout the entire film. You're thinking, I just don't need this. I need a storyline, to be honest with you. I mean, take nothing away from it. It is very, very wonderful to look at, which is kind of bizarre because, you know, I'm kind of giving it a kick in here. It does look great, you know. It fair play to Luc Besson for making something this stand out. But then I kind of remembered that, you remember when Avatar came out and everybody went, Avatar looks amazing, it looks amazing. And then in the cold light of day, everybody kind of went, yeah, the storyline was a bit boring, wasn't it? It was about a tree. Well, that's the same with Valerian. You know, it looks great. It will bamboozle you. And is there a story here? No, there isn't. It's just so confusing that by the end of it, I really didn't know what had happened. I was just left scratching my head.
Okay, that's a bit of a shame, because usually if your interest starts to wane halfway through a film, the inevitable last part of guns blazing and flashy bang bang,
pow,
splat, romantic kiss at the end kind of makes you go, that wasn't so bad, because you only remember the last 10 minutes where it suddenly interesting.
Yeah, exactly. But even with this, you're kind of like, okay, it's not that you're waiting for the film to end, because you are interested in watching it because it looks so great, but you can't get away from the idea of, I don't know what's happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not so great then.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, what else are you recommending for us?
Okay, so second DVD pick is a film called My Feral Heart. Now, this is a film, the great thing about doing this job is, amongst obviously going to see all of these films, you know, all these big blockbusters, occasionally you get to see these smaller films that kind of snuck under the radar when they went in the cinema or kind of missed them, and then they come out on DVD and you know, and thought, right, I'm going to see this. This is one of those films that is, it has more heart than most of the blockbusters I've seen this year. It's a story about Luke, a young independent man with Down syndrome, who stumbles across a wild and life-changing friendship. It's a small independent film. It's all shot in Rochford as well, which is kind of interesting.
So very local then.
Very, very local. Even more local is the fact that the man who is normally here, no offence to yourself, Charlie, Keith, is in the film.
So Keith's in the film, is he?
Keith is in the film, only for a little bit, but yeah, he's in the film. So let's not talk about Keith. We won't rate his acting. Well, we could do, he's not here, but we won't rate his acting. what's great about this film is it's so upbeat, it's so uplifting. You know, Luke has, he lived with his mother, and his mother sadly passes away, and they kind of shunt him off to this home. And you can see he goes back into himself. He's kind of a bubbly lad, but he goes back into himself. Then he finds solace in this this young lad who's an ex-convict. And what's great is neither of them judge each other for what they actually are, whether it's somebody with an illness or whether it's somebody who is an ex-convict. They just get on. They immediately get on. They make each other laugh. And it's so wonderful. And they are very funny together. I mean, I laughed so much at these two because they were thick as thieves. You know, at the time, you know, when you go out and you're kind of, you've got these little in-jokes, that's what these two had. They were so funny in it. And Luke has kind of been shaded from quite a lot of the horrors of the modern world when living with his mum. So when he moves to, when he's shunted to this house, he's kind of opened up to a lot of stuff, and it does set him back quite a bit. And you kind of think, oh, I don't know how this is going to respond. But there is a lovely young girl who works there, and she sort of takes him under her wing, and she starts to show him, look, you can do this, you can do that, don't be afraid of it, just go for it, you have the ability to do it. And it, you know, it's such a positive message. I think this is what the film's all about. It is a positive message. It's about looking beyond the surface of people and finding out what is true in their heart. It's sad, it's funny, it's heartfelt, it's emotional, it's... Do you know, it's so real. This is the thing. It is so real. It's one of those films that probably, well, I don't imagine it didn't, but it probably cost less than the catering budget on like the Transformers films. And yet it is infinitely better than those films. This is a film that snuck up on me and just completely captivated me. And by the time I'd finished, I kind of felt like I was... like I could go out and just, you know, spread joy to everybody. It felt like I'd been wrapped in a warm ball of wool or something like that. It's so beautiful. It really is.
Mark Sibby, thank you very much for coming in. And you're very hot on the social media. So a quick plug for the Twitter, because you get your reviews and your audio and your predictions and bits and pieces up pretty quickly, don't you?
I try to, yes. No hanging about with me. Yeah, so on Twitter, Mark_Sibby. And you can find my website, MarkSibby.com.